All right, Genesis 46 and 47. So Joseph was taken to Egypt. There he was sold as a slave into Potiphar's house. Potiphar's wife got her eye on him. He ends up being falsely accused, arrested, imprisoned. But even there, he takes over and becomes the head, you know, steward of the prison. And then after a couple of more years, he gets out. He interprets the dream. His brothers come after the famine and get food. And then we reach the point where now Jacob is coming to Egypt, his dad. And it was quite a shock to Jacob because he thought Joseph was dead. And when the brothers came back and said, "Dad, Joseph's there." Now, remember that the story they told in Joseph's disappearance was what? We found this robe with blood on it. We don't know what happened. We assume he was killed by a wild animal. Now, of course, we know that was a lie. They sold them to merchantmen that were traveling through. But that's all that Jacob knew, is that his son was gone, presumed dead. And now, you know, 20 years later, he's alive. He's alive, and now they're all going to Egypt. Remember what Pharaoh said. He said, take the animals you need, the carriages, the wagons you need, take all kinds of food and clothes and all this stuff. Go to your homeland and get your father and bring him back. And tell him not even to bother packing. He won't need it. He can just leave it all behind. Now, that would be a blessing, wouldn't it? How many of you want to pack your house to move? Not me. If I could just leave it and go somewhere else, okay, but I don't want to pack. And that's what Pharaoh said. But when we get to chapter 46, in verse number 1, Israel took his journey, and that's, of course, Jacob, with all that he had. He packed. He said, I need this, and I got to take that, and I'm going to need this, and I can't leave this behind. And he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. So Jacob's promise and the promise of God to Jacob that he had, remember, at Bethel, now at Beersheba. Beersheba means what? Bear means well, and Sheba means oath. So it's the well of oath. And that Abraham dug. Remember, he dug that well. That was a well of oath. He there made a promise. And it's the same thing that Jacob did with Laban. He made a promise, and we recall that. So these promises are made, and they're memorialized, they're documented through these towers or these stones or these altars or these wells. And so when Jacob gets there, God gives him this vision. Why would God do that? Did you think about that? What does this suggest to us that Jacob was thinking? He was afraid, wasn't he? He was afraid. He was afraid, and so God comes to him in a vision. He says, fear not. The reason that God addressed it is because it existed. Jacob, I mean, you think, why would Jacob be afraid? Because every time the Jews go to Egypt, it's trouble. They end up getting in trouble somehow. And of course, with Abraham and Isaac, they got there and they told some stories about their wives, right? Well, you know, she's not really my wife. And then come to find out, it was his wife. Oh, but she's my sister too. So, you know, half-sister. And so that always caused confusion and problems for them. And Jacob didn't want to go. Jacob, even though his son was there and he wanted to see his son, remember what has happened now. In these times, they come back and they say, well, we couldn't bring Simeon home. No, you can't. We got to take Benjamin. Oh, no, you're not taking Benjamin. Well, what are we going to do? I don't know, but we're not going to take Benjamin. And so this fear that he has of going, but God gives him confidence. God gives him vision, and he says, fear not to go, for I will there make of thee a great nation. How many people were in Jacob's family? Okay, 70. So with the 70 souls, is that a great nation? Not a great nation, is it? But God says, I will make of thee a great nation. I mean, right now, 70 is a pretty good family, isn't it? Pretty big family. But it's not a nation. But God says, I will make of thee a great nation. Verse 4, I will go down with thee into Egypt. I will surely bring thee up again. Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So the assurance that he will see his son, the assurance that he's not going to stay in Egypt. Now, of course, we know that he's buried in the land of Israel. And that was the point. He didn't want to be buried in Egypt. He wanted to be buried with his dad and his granddad. He wanted to be buried in Hebron, where he is buried. And so, I will bring thee up again. Verse 5, Jacob rose from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob their father, the little ones, the wives, in wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and they came to Egypt. Jacob and all his seed with him. And then we name all the people that were there, all the family. Verse 26, the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66. Verse 27, the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls, that the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70. So 70. And he sent Judah before him to Joseph to direct his face unto Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen, and Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen, to present and presented himself to him, and he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. How about that? 22 years since he had seen his father. And remember, one of the questions is the old man alive, right? They say, well, we got our father. And he said, is he alive? Yeah, he's alive. And that's what broke him. He needed to see his father. He loved his father. And so you can kind of think about the preparation that Joseph had to meet, to see his dad again, how excited he was. And so he gets to meet his father after 22 years. Did he have any ill will toward his father? No. His dad didn't sell him into slavery. Did he have any ill will toward his brothers? No. And that's the question that comes up. I think it's been asked a few times in the last few weeks. But why did it happen? And when you look at what happened, it was in Egypt that God made of Israel a great nation. How many Jews came out of Egypt? What's that? That's men. 600,000. So over 1 million people. They went in as 70. And they came out as 1 million. Is that a great nation? That's a great nation. So when you consider what they went in as and what they came out as and the lessons that they learned. Guys, hardships make us stronger. How many of you like hardships? Me neither. I don't like bad days. I don't like tough days. I don't like learning the practical lessons of life. But if we learn them, we're wiser on the other side. And they learned lessons in Egypt they could not have learned in Canaan. And without getting too far ahead of ourselves, remember when they went to Kadesh Barnea and they had the opportunity to enter the promised land and they didn't, it cost them 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. But God didn't kill those that were 20 and up. He kept them there so that they could grow old and teach the next generation all their history. We need those who've experienced it to teach the next generation those experiences. How many of you know something that you've never been through? Yeah, y'all learned some stuff that people taught you. You learned it because you know, well, you know, so-and-so did such and such, and they, right, those stories. But you didn't have to go through it to know better. And because you were able to learn from their experience, you didn't do it yourself, didn't make the same mistakes. Guys, that's the best way to learn. It may not be the most educated way to learn. In other words, I think if you go through it, you know more about it than the guy you told about it. But I'm okay with just hearing about it when it comes to a lot of things in life. And so the lessons were learned in Egypt that never could have been learned in Israel. They were, it was a whole different situation. So verse number 33, Joseph is instructing his family that they need to go to Goshen, that they need to be shepherds. Verse 34, ye shall say, thy servant's trade has been about cattle from our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So what is Joseph's plan? Joseph's plan is to get his family separated, segregated from the Egyptians. Because while he spent 20 years there, but not of his own choosing, and while he's embedded in the culture, while he's there, you know, still serving God, still in faith, but he sees what's going on around him, what would you say the number one sin in Egypt would be? Idol worship, false religion. And the same thing's going on in America today. Not just false religion, but they have the word church on the sign, but come in the door and see what they preach. Come in the door and see what they use as their source of information. See what the majority of the time is spent talking about. Are they talking about the Word of God? This is where the lessons are, the Word of God. And that's where our focus needs to be. You've got all the rest of the week to listen to everything else and read everything else. This time is for the Word. And that's what it ought to be. I'm not criticizing different styles. Styles is not a matter of doctrine. Doctrine is what we need. The Word of God is what we need. And Joseph sees what's going on in Egypt. He sees the false worship. He sees the idol worship. He sees the materialism. He sees the ungodliness. And so what does he say? He says, y'all need to have your own little community segregated from the rest of the country. And that was the plan. Tell them you're shepherds, which, by the way, is what they were. Chapter 47. Joseph came and told Pharaoh, said, my father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds, all that they have are come. Pharaoh told him, you don't need to bring anything. We got everything you need right here. Behold, they're in the land of Goshen. He took some of his brethren, five, and presented them to Pharaoh. Verse 3, Pharaoh said to his brethren, what is your occupation? They said to Pharaoh, thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. They said moreover unto Pharaoh, for to sojourn in the land are we come, for thy servants have no pasture for their flocks. The famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen. And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, thy father and thy brethren are coming to thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. In the best of the land make thy father and brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell. If thou knowest any men of activity among them, make them rulers over my cattle. If you got some good people, quality people, you give them a job working for me, taking care of my stock. So now they're in. The invitation has been extended and accepted and fulfilled. And they're in the land of Goshen. And then, of course, Joseph brings his father before Pharaoh in verse number 7. Verse 8, Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How old art thou?" And Jacob said, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." Verse 10, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. So the blessings of God, the spoken blessings. How many of you blessed somebody this week with your words? Blessed. We hear the phrase "blessed them out." That's not what he's talking about. Blessing means blessing. Well, hope you have a great day. Hope you have a good trip. Hope you get good news. Right? Something, some kind of a blessing. And so they moved to the best of the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh commanded. Verse 12, Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. Verse 13, and there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore. So that the land of Canaan, the land of Egypt, and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. So we had what? 7 years of excess. When you get the excess, you don't go out and, buy a Lamborghini. I'm not against Lamborghinis. If you come rolling up in one, I'm not going to criticize you. But you got extra money, you might want to store some away. Save some for a rainy day. Invest it. What's that? Buy some bacon? What'd you say? Use, but don't waste it. Because there are hard times ahead. I don't know that money's even going to do us any good in the hard times ahead. But we've got to be mindful of what may come tomorrow. And this is a warning I was given in 2000. I was given this warning in 2000 because I could feel the rumbling. Something was up. I'm not a prophet, but I could see what's going on around me. And when 9/11 came along, I knew what it was. I knew what the rumbling was. I knew what the sense was. And we got to prepare. Guys, I'm not a doom and gloom preacher. But if you're expecting the storm, you'll be prepared for it. But if you just watch the clouds, you'll never plant. There's a balance. And so we've got to be prepared for it. We've got to know that hard times are ahead. So they come in past the seven seasons of excess. Now it starts to thin out. Now they go out there and the corn doesn't look good and the grass doesn't look good and there's no rain and it begins to be dry and it begins to be hot and it begins to be poor. And so the lean cattle have eaten the fat cattle. Where are you going to take your flocks? Where are you going to take them in Egypt? There's only one place, and that's Goshen. That's the fertile land. That's the reason that Joseph said, get that land. What did Pharaoh said? The best of the land. There's only one place, and that was Goshen. It was the only place that would survive. And it's the best land, but why didn't people move there? Because there were shepherds. Oh, I'm not going to go live there. I'm not going to be around them. I don't like them, old dummies, knotheads, whatever kind of, slur you could have. I'm not going to go live there. The grass was green. The land was watered. The cattle were fed, fat. All everywhere else, it was dry. Well, begins to get lean. It gets severe. Not just in Egypt, but all in the region, severe. The people come and they say, we're out of food. Joseph says, well, we got storage, all kind of corn. We'll sell you food. Okay. So they buy food. They run out eventually. They come back and they say, well, we ran out. Well, what can we do? We don't have any money. All of our money's gone. We already spent all of our money last year. He said, we'll sell you our cattle. He says, sell me your cattle. So he buys all the cattle. So now he's got all the corn. He's got all the cattle. He's got all the money. They come back after that money runs out, and they say what? We've got nothing left to offer you except our land and ourselves. And he said, I'll buy your land. So he buys their land. They go into slavery. And we're talking about the whole region. In other words, the government owns everything. That's a wonderful idea, isn't it? It's coming. The government owns everything. They have become sharecroppers on their own land. You can keep 80% for yourself, but 20% goes to the government, and it's the government's land, and you belong to the government. 20% tax, right? I know, that'd be great, wouldn't it? That'd go flat tax, 20%. So 20%, that was the agreement, and that's the rest of this chapter that we didn't read through. But look at, let's pick up a few highlights. Verse 13 says, they fainted by reason of the famine. You see in verse 17, they brought their cattle. In verse 19, they offered themselves and their land. And Joseph bought all the land. That's verse 20. And look at verse 23. Joseph said to the people, behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Now, I know that this is, if we try to put this in a political sense in modern day, it's a terrible idea. But what would you say, if you could give me one word for what happened right here, what would that one word be? What? Okay, socialism, all right. One word. Why did they do it? Survival. Yeah, they were hungry. I told somebody yesterday, it was calling and they were telling me about their situation. And I said, look, this has not changed in 10 years. We could have this conversation every day for the last 10 years and you have the same complaint. And it's everybody else's fault. But at some point, you got to say, this is me and I got to do something about it. And I said, what's different today? What's going to change today? And I said, you have got to get hungry enough to do something about it. And the longer everybody bails you out and helps you out and assists you in doing what you're doing, you're never going to get hungry enough to take the step you've got to take to change your life. By the way, that's good advice, even if it did come from me. I think it was Ben Franklin that said, poverty is supposed to be uncomfortable. Now, you don't like that. I know that people don't like that, especially when we're broke. But guys, this is the greatest country on the face of the earth. We live in the land of opportunity at a time of opportunity. The thing that keeps us from succeeding is between our ears and above our feet. We've got to get our feet, we've got to get our behinds off the couch and go find something to do. Guys, I know I've been unemployed before. I know how frustrating it is. I've been down to my last dollar. I'm not giving you advice of something I heard from somebody else. I lived it. When you get hungry enough and uncomfortable enough, you'll do whatever it takes. And they sold their cattle and they sold their land and they're out of money and they've got nowhere to go. So then what do? They go to the government and say, help us. And what does the government do in exchange for help? Takes control of their lives. And we've seen that in this country here. And the more we ask for their help, the more control they're going to have. They work for us. At least they used to. Y'all didn't know that was in Genesis, did you? But that's what happened. But I get it. It's survival. If we would go back to the times, and please, come to me and tell me where I'm wrong on this. If you come to this church and say, I can't pay my light bill, has anybody ever done that and their light bill not gotten paid? Has anybody ever reached out to the church for help and not gotten help that they need? And a lot of people don't reach out to the church, but we find out they need it and we give it to them. Light bill, car payment, take care of your kids. We want you fed and sheltered. Now, if your cable's out, read a book. Right? But guys, the church, the family of God, our biological family and our church family are supposed to be there to help us when we're in need. And a lot of times it doesn't end up going through the church. Somebody says we got a need and it just gets managed. It just gets handled. That's how it should be. The church. But what happened is, I wasn't part of it. I can't tell you if the church closed our hands and said, we can't help you, go to the government. But at some point, the government got into the charity business and took over and has become God to many people. And has become church to many people. Now, I'm not opposed to government assistance. But I'm telling you, the more assistance you get, the more control they have. And that's exactly what we see here in Genesis. Verse 27, and Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen. They had possessions. They grew and multiplied exceedingly. Who? Everybody else is relying on the government. Everybody else is on the government support system. But the Jews are thriving. The whole country's enslaved. The Jews are thriving. Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. The time drew nigh that Israel must die, and he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh. Okay, y'all remember, this is the way an oath is made. They put the hand under the thigh. And it's interesting that Jacob would put anybody else in that position after what he did with Esau, right? With Isaac. Deal kindly and truly with me and bury me not, I pray, in Egypt. I don't want to be buried here. Why? Not home. It's not a great significance, guys. When we die, our body goes in the ground. You've heard the term, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I got a friend that buried his spouse in a common grave, no vault or anything, just a wooden casket. And then he wanted to move her to a new burial plot. And when he went back, guess what he found? Dust. Because that's what happens. Now, if you get a vault, you can buy a $10,000 casket that'll keep you preserved for many years. I don't know why you'd do that. Because we're not going to come back and look. But one day, our bodies will be resurrected. Even if it's dust, we'll be resurrected. When we die, we go into eternity with God or to the holding place for judgment called hell. And so there's no point having a $10,000 casket. I'm not against the casket business. Everybody's got to make money, but a simple pine box will do. But he didn't want to be buried there. Why? Because he wanted to be buried in a place where his father and his grandfather were. Carry me out of Egypt. Bury me in that burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, swear unto me. And he swore unto him. And Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head. So, the point of in those two chapters, we see the preservation of the family of Jacob or the family of Israel. And we see that God made a promise as Jacob was, as Israel he's called, is going down into Egypt. And God says, don't worry, don't be afraid. We'll get you in there. get you out. See, God made him that promise. You won't stay there. You'll get out. And so that's why he wanted to be buried in the homeland. Any questions? Comments? Let's take a break.